The contents of this page have not been reviewed or endorsed by the Chicago Bulls. All opinions expressed by Sam Smith are solely his own and do not reflect the opinions of the Chicago Bulls or their basketball operations staff, parent company, partners, or sponsors. His sources are not known to the Bulls, and he has no special access to information beyond the access and privileges that go along with being an NBA-accredited member of the media.
Hey, it's Sam Smith, and here we go now down the stretch. The NBA trading deadline is passed. Actually, I'd like to play that that game they play with Charles Barkley on the broadcast sometimes, given some of the names who are guys who are traded. Do you know what teams Austin Day, Jordan Hamilton, Aaron Brooks, Eric Maynor, and Roger Mason played for? Tough one. Tough one's there. Actually, who knew Austin Day was with Toronto? And actually, Day could be one of the winners. You go to San Antonio, which he did. He has some unusual talents, a big guy who can really shoot the ball. And you can see him being a system-type player. And San Antonio, we know, has saved a lot of careers or created them. Who exactly had ever heard of Patty Mills? And basically, the Spurs typically last week sat all their players, and Patty Mills averaged about 28 points as a chance to be player of the week. And I think most people wouldn't have known if that was in the NBA or the Australian League. But that said, there was a lot of movement at the awful lot of moves at the last minute. And we did hear a lot about the Sixers. And you really can't call that tanking because they already were in last place and had lost about 20 straight games or something like that. Michael Carter-Williams now will be officially being passing to himself. So he has a very good chance both to lead the league in scoring and assists, given it's going to be pretty hard to identify who's on that team. But that said, you have to give Larry Bird credit again. Not that Larry ever wants it. Sort of a Derek Jeter of basketball. Although Larry, I don't think Larry Bird's ever considered the something else of something else, given he's Larry Bird. But the guy who was a league MVP, coach of the year, clearly has to be executive of the year with another terrific move and also looks like a future possibility too. Trading Danny Granger to the Sixers and getting back, Sixers probably got three fourth round picks out of that though. I'm not sure. I'll be checking on that. But that said, LaVoy Allen, who's not a a serviceable big guy, can come in, definitely added depth. Remember, they also have Andrew Bynum there, who will be cranked up at some point and wheeled out onto the court for a game or two. And as we saw earlier in the season, at least in one of the games against the Bulls, you know, he's still about 7 foot and 275 pounds, which might at the very least scare Chris Bosh. But that said, I thought, I mean, the key move, and I think the big name will be Evan Turner, obviously. A wing player, you know, having a career season on one level, but a guy who, you know, really can do some things for them because George Hill is really not a classic point guard. He's really kind of he's really best suited as a combo guard to play off the bench. Evan Turner's, I'm not going to say he's like Paul George. He actually has a different name, for one thing. But, you know, he's always been a guy who's been out of position with the Sixers because he really sort of had no position, especially when they had Drew Holiday, a point guard who needs the ball. Turner is a, you know, kind of a Scottie Pippen. He's very much not quite as athletic, but a very much like Pippen kind of player. Not a very good shooter, but a small forward who needs to have the ball in his hand a lot and will make plays. And that's a heck of an addition for Indiana, not only for depth-wise, but a guy in addition to George who can handle the ball, has got size. You know, that's very important against Miami, where you could have multiple guys run pick and rolls on both sides of the floor and handle the ball. A terrific pickup. And also, I think that gives them a lot of insurance with Lance Stephenson. Given the attention Stevenson's got this season as unrestricted free agent, Indiana's limited budget, I wouldn't be surprised if Stevenson prices himself out of Indiana, goes somewhere else, and becomes their nightmare. Really a guy, you know, obviously basketball talent, but a guy that Larry Bird and nobody else had confidence in, you know, who could be a player. Bird, you know, kind of rode herd over him all these years, supported him, encouraged him, and got him to settle down. Very, you know, high-level, emotional-type player who can do things with the ball, handle the ball, pass. He's got, I think he has four triple, I think he's leading the league in triple-doubles this year, although it would have been behind Joakim Noah if Noah was able to get 10 points more often. That said, a guy who's probably going to look for a eight-figure contract. Indiana is very cautious about the luxury tax. Bird's made it clear they're not going to go into that. And he strikes me as the next Eddie Robinson. Talent offers sort of a one-season situation, although I think Eddie was just one playoff. And I think he would be fine in Indiana. But I see Turner as sort of insurance about that, that the Pacers can you know, make a more modest deal with Turner, give him a player with similar skills, a more grounded player, Turner from the Midwest. You know, obviously, a guy was overdrafted, which is part of the problem. When you drafted number two and wasn't a great draft, and you don't really have the skills to be that kind of player, there's always more expected of you. That could be a really good spot with a good team, disciplined, good character, and as I said, good protection for the future for the Pacers. So clearly the biggest deal of trading deadline day Thursday, right at the last minute, and kudos to the Pacers and Bird for another terrific job. Not that much of a surprise moving Danny Granger out. You could see he's a limited contributor this year. Hasn't fully recovered from his injuries. Has not shot the ball well at all, and that's really all he is at this point. You often got the sense that they were putting him out on the court more as a favor than as a need. I can see him doing a buyout. He's an unrestricted free agent trying to get to a different situation. And I think that's going to be really one of the more interesting stories now come the next week. All these players with the expiring contracts or not expiring contract. Be interesting to see what Jason Terry will do, whether he wants a, you know, and Miami's deal is interesting, the Roger Mason deal. That's where he was, by the way. Who knew? But that was basically to clear a roster spot. I thought Miami was going to do something at the deadline, and you could tell they still do. But it seems in Pat Riley, you know, they've done this, and they've had the advantage of, you know, having been two-time champions and playing with LeBron James. And guys do want to play with LeBron James because he'll get you the ball, and you certainly have a great chance of success. And so you could see that that Miami's going to want to use that spot, given they gave up a lot, not a lot, but gave up stuff and got nothing in return to get that roster spot. So they probably have their eyes on it. I wouldn't be surprised if they already have a deal with somebody for the March 1st date of adding a guy to a roster spot. So that's going to be something to watch. And Terry, you know, a guy who's going to the Kings and seemingly very little, you know, need for him there, even though they traded Marcus Thornton to the Nets earlier and also, you know, got back Reggie Evans. You know, as far as, quote, big deals, I don't know how big you would call it, Spencer Hawes going to the Cavs is a nice addition. You know, he's been having his career year with the Sixers, shot the ball better this year, has remained healthy. So that's it's a good pickup for the Cavs, although, you know, they're going to have sort of a logjam there. Varejao's been out once he comes back. But, you know, really, when you look back at this last month or six-week period, you know, probably the biggest name, biggest trade was the Luol Deng trade, where the Bulls made the move in early January for the salary cap relief and future flexibility, you know, regarding Bynum, who they released and ended up with the Pacers. A strictly financial deal, get under the luxury tax and, you know, give the team a lot more options going forward. A lot of us, including me, thought the Bulls would be in big trouble, questioned the move. And obviously the Bulls have done really well since then. I don't necessarily believe it's an indictment on Ding as much as, you know, a credit to the Bulls' system, character, their players that they still have, the coaching of Tom Thibodeau. It's really been a terrific run for the team led by Joakim Noah, who again, with the coming out of the All-Star break, game in Toronto, had a career-high 13 assists. He's had two 12-assist games already this season. That 13 assists was the most by a center in 18 years in the NBA. And Noah's consistent high-level play has, enhanced the Bulls' offense, which, you know, sometimes can be slow. And in addition, the addition of DJ Augustine, terrific pickup. Again, another big fourth quarter. He's had a number of these where he's, since his release from the Raptors in December, coming to the Bulls. He's had a number of these where he's had modest games going into the fourth quarter and then hit two or three threes like he did, which you could tell how much he loved doing that against the Raptors Wednesday, being back there for the first time, even pounding his chest. You know, given he's kind of slight, he appeared to knock himself out. Or just almost, and he sort of survived beating on his chest, which was a big positive for the team and for him as well. But that said, it's been a terrific run for the Bulls with their Western Conference trip and coming out of it, beating Brooklyn at home right before the break, coming out of the break, beating Toronto, and facing a good stretch coming up as they're in Miami on Sunday. And in Atlanta with a 3-4 nights. The team is basically stabilized. You can see they're playing a short rotation. It's basically seven players with Augustine and Gibson off the bench. But as we saw, Gibson has come on quite a bit, especially when he's been starting. Boozer, I think this has motivated Boozer, seeing how well Gibson has played. Also with all the rumors about amnesty and everything. You can see Boozer taking the ball to the basket more, being a lot more aggressive. Not that he wasn't trying to play hard before, but you could fall into habits. And he'd kind of been falling into this habit of being a jump shooter, fading away. But it's always nice, even for veterans, to get pushed at your position. And Boozer, has been around a long time, been an all-star, been an Olympic team. He's a prideful player. And he could hear, he knew all the talk about Gibson, and he should be starting and coming strong. And so I think the Bulls are seeing a great benefit of that. Boozer coming out strong, team going to them. They have, I think they're 22 or 23-5 when they lead after the first quarter. And a lot of that has to do with going to Boozer early. And so you come out of the All-Star break and you've got less than 30 games remaining in the season to the playoffs. And you can see an enhanced excitement among the players. That Bulls-Toronto game was just a terrific game. Hard played, physical, six or seven technical fouls, tough game, playoff type game. It's sort of cliche always to say, oh, this is a playoff intensity, but it was sort of great to see that in February. But, back to Ding, it was kind of a bad sign for him that the Cavs, now they did have a management change in the midst of this, and the general manager was fired, general manager who traded for him, but his name came up in talk. Apparently they were feeling out trying to trade him to get a first round pick, which is, the Bulls felt they couldn't get when they ended up getting sort of future picks. One of them, they're not going to get the Sacramento pick for this year. Obviously Sacramento's not going to be, you wouldn't think, out of the top 12, even with picking up Reggie Evans and Jason Terry. But then being brought into Cleveland, the notion he's an all-star piece to make a playoff run. And we all knew it was a terrible move for him personally, not just because he was leaving Chicago where he really loved it and enjoyed living and playing, but going to a Cleveland with Mike Brown as a coach, just a terrible lack of an offensive system. Ding being a complete system player, enhanced playing under good coaches like Scott Skiles and Tom Thibodeau. Really damaged fall back under Vinny Del Negro's. Just didn't know how to employ him in a multiple sort of offensive role. And You could see that with Mike Brown now. Deng runs into the corner. It's virtually a mirror image of the way we saw him playing under Vinny. He runs into the corner. There's a lot of action on top with the point guard dribbling. And basically stands around and runs back on defense. And then for the team to look to trade him before the deadline, thinking the notion, you know, the story put out was, well, they weren't sure they could re-sign him. Well, they were never sure they could re-sign him. Obviously, what the point was, they're not sure they need him to try to make this run to the playoffs, which is going to make offseason very interested in him. You would think under the circumstances, Deng's not going to want to get his last big contract back in Cleveland. So it's going to be a real adventure to see what his market value comes to be. And, you know, it may be what the Bulls offered him or even less. And so I could see him taking a shorter deal, you know, maybe a year or two for, you know, larger money, maybe something like Paul Millsap did with Atlanta, and then maybe try to get back on the market again in a year or two, given, you know, he's still under 30. So he's going to be fine. He's still going to make a tremendous amount of money. It's going to be a high-level NBA player, but sometimes things don't go well. The other name, the other familiar name for us, you know, in Chicago is Omer Asik. At Houston, obviously miscalculated on. It was a nice and smart thing, and they got a lot of credit for that backloaded deal, but now they're sort of stuck with it. Asik clearly doesn't want to play in Houston, doesn't like it there, doesn't like coaching and management. And they apparently made some promises to him, which they've long backed off on and pretended they didn't make. And I think that's why you see, you know, some of his disinterest. He was hurt. You know, he has been hurt. But they obviously couldn't move that $15 million he's owed for next season. And along with Jeremy Lin, that's $30 million they're going to have to be paying next season in addition to the rest of their payroll. So it's going to be interesting to see Houston, even though they've been playing really well, had a good run, gotten up to third in the Western Conference. They're going to have some big money there, and Chandler Parsons coming up in the future. Looking at some of the other deals, Atlanta, you know, has been struggling, made a decent pickup with Antoine Jameson. Maybe still has a little bit left. Certainly could help them. They've been a little weak in the wing. You know, Kyle Korver's had a great year shooting the ball, but not a classic athletic wing who can guard those guys. Their coach has done a very good job holding that together with Horford out, but they need a little help. Steve Blake, I think, is a nice pickup for the Warriors. They needed a little bench help. They needed a guy to organize things with their shooting guards and, you know, somebody in the sort of a form of a Jarrett Jack who helped them a lot last year. Jordan Hamilton, by the way, he was with Denver. None of us were really quite sure of that, although he played reasonably well. He goes to Houston with an Aaron Brooks deal. Aaron Brooks gets traded usually about every year. So this would be about his seventh team in the last 4 years. The Clippers never did like Byron Mullins. Went off to the Sixers, and we don't even know what exactly is going on there. And the Bobcats made a nice pickup. And Ridenour, you know, is a solid point guard who can make shots. Gary Neal, who fell out of favor there for whatever reason, not sure what favor is in there in Milwaukee, but he wasn't in. And, you know, that's some offense that they desperately need. And you can see Charlotte being a playoff team now, had gotten to the All-Star break with the sweep over the absolutely dead Pistons. Oh, boy, they really look like they packed it in. Looked like a good shot to make the playoffs or even close, which, from the Bulls' standpoint, we'll most likely get the Bulls there picked too, since it's protected through 10. So if it's 11 or above, 11 to 30, the Bulls would get it. It seems like it's likely. And Andre Miller, banished in Denver for whatever that reason was. I know he yelled at the coach and cursed him out, but heck, you got to have a tougher skin than that. Anyway, he goes to Washington. They're still going to play John Wall and Bradley Beal most of the time. But they really needed a veteran to settle those guys down. They lose a lot of games at the end of games. They lose a lot of games to poor teams. And, you know, Miller's a, you know, a solid, savvy kind of guy. Not, doesn't have that much left as a player, but still a good guy to have on your team. And I think that was their thinking. And it was smart. They moved on Jan Vesely, who for some reason everybody in D.C. hates. Not that he plays much anyway. So that didn't matter much. And then Brooklyn picked up Marcus Thornton with his long contract. And now they're, I think their luxury tax bill is such that they're able to buy Yahoo. But it doesn't seem to matter much. Anyway, so no big names traded as we expected. Really big names, Rondo and Pau Gasol. Certainly not Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Love. That stuff was all speculative nonsense. But also makes for entertaining reading come trade deadline. So we're sure it'll come up again. And there is more. The two elements you notice why there weren't, you know, a huge number of big deals is basically nobody traded the first. There were no firsts in play. Because these firsts are highly valued this year. One, because of the potential of the class, which we don't know for sure. You know, but two, with the new labor agreement and the guaranteed salaries locked in for firsts for 4 years, those are going to be much important because you can see the way rosters are going to be with a couple of high-priced players and a lot of low-priced players. And so those draft picks are going to be important. And also the implications of the luxury tax and the penalties beyond that. A lot of teams were uncertain about it taking on players with big salaries moving forward. So it is going to make, if not trading difficult, you know, more uncertain for a while until the impact of these rules made more clear after this summer, probably. So anyway, but still a lot of late activity, some interest, and also with Indiana having slumping a little bit lately, you know, nice pickup there, good move there, and time for the stretch run. So I'll be back with you next week, and maybe we can talk about that March 1st date and see what Miami's going to do. And then everyone will go, that's not fair. Anyway, that's just basketball. Have a good week. Oh, love that. Have a good day talk. No, not really, but anyway. Just wanted to be part of the crowd.